Mommy, mommy, look, there's the man. He's stealing that cart over there. Why is he doing that? Oh, it's okay, honey. His wife needs it. It'll be all right. She needs to put something on there to take something from the kitchen over to the room. But mommy, he's taking, it's not his cart. So goes the observation of Dr. Lawrence Kohlberg. From the eyes of a child come the understandings of morality and ethics. What is right? What is wrong? How does it all begin? Where does this come from? Now, of course, as we look at this whole area and topic today of morality, morality has to do with, as what Dr. Kohlberg will say, having to do with our development. Our development. Now, of course, Kohlberg is not presenting this from a Christian worldview, a biblical worldview, but he is coming from a scientific worldview, completely empirical and from the basis of saying, okay, what do we observe? How are we measuring this? What does the child say or the adult say? And the relationship between those two and the relationship of what they then are evaluating to the relationship to others who are doing the moral or immoral act. Where does the moral compass come from? How does this work? Well, Dr. Kohlberg asked these questions. He was trying to figure this out in the 20th century. Of course, prior to him, as we've looked at the history of psychology, we looked at Freud, we looked at Carl Jung, as well as Carl Rogers. And now today we also look at Kohlberg as we go from understanding the conscious and the unconscious to then the what is conscious and also what is applied. However, at this point, what we're going to talk about are the theories, if you will, of what Dr. Kohlberg was trying to tell us, what he was observing from these observational experiments, and therefore hypotheses. Now, from there, we can then take it and apply to other practical examples, which we'll hear in a minute. But back to Kohlberg. What did he teach? What was he all about? Kohlberg talked about the fact that people go from their child years through their adult years through this process of becoming moral. Moral. Now, we would look at this and say, well, you train up a child as he ought to go. You look over to Scripture, and the Bible talks about this as it applies to children, especially in the book of Proverbs, how my son, take heed to my teaching. Wisdom is the start here. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And so on. And we read about children and parenting in the book of Ephesians. And also the other epistles as Paul instructs his church members. So there's definitely a point of reference when it comes to the Ten Commandments and also other instructions through the Bible that are from God. However, Dr. Kohlberg and others like him help us to put more, say, modern understandings and also framework to the absolutes of Scripture as they give us the absolute of thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not commit adultery, honor thy father and mother. This still comes through. Kohlberg, of course, coming from what we can tell, a non-biblical worldview, is trying to help the modern world better understand morality as we see it. Of course, classically, we look at morality and ethics from a mythological standpoint, because it all has come through story. Different cultures have different stories. For example, as we look at the culture of the Greeks, what goes on with Zeus, Hera, and also the other gods and goddesses and their stories, the ancient people are saying, well, once upon a time, Zeus did this and Hera did that. And we look at the whole thing of how there was conflict between the gods and they fought each other. And one god begot another god, and they were trying to figure this out. And from there, they became the whole genesis, if you will, of morality, understanding what was right and wrong, based upon these stories that were done by oral tradition. Now, in the same way, Kohlberg, well, before we get to Kohlberg, in the same way, God gave the story, gave the absolutes, the truth, through Moses. Prior to Moses, Abraham. And of course, God speaking to the people directly before the flood. As applied to Adam and Eve still, even after the fall. And also with Cain and Abel. And those examples, those stories that we read about in Genesis. With the patriarchs. So God taught them. And eventually, when Moses came and there was the Exodus out of Egypt, we then see the whole development of morality and also ethics when it comes to God teaching the people at Sinai and in the desert. The Ten Commandments, Levitical laws, and so forth. God put the law into place to tell the people, to help the people to understand how to follow this almighty, all-powerful, all-righteous God that they could not see. Well, of course, fast forward now to the 20th century, and you have those who don't know who God is. And I'm sure Dr. Kohlberg knew who God was, but we don't know where he was at spiritually, honestly. We only know his theories and his ideas. Personally, we don't. So based upon this, we then learn from Kohlberg and can then point back to Scripture of how we can then understand it. Now, after we talk about Kohlberg's idea today, or ideas, we're going to then talk about Dr. Fowler's theories about faith development. Who is a believer? Who did bring things into place? Who have a biblical worldview? Well, let's get back to Kohlberg. Kohlberg talked about morality. He talked about ethics from the early ages, childhood, on into adulthood. Here's how it worked. His theory of moral development begins with the pre-conventional stage, level one, if you will. Kids who are younger than 6 years old, in this first step, they see punishment and obedience orientation. That's what they're being conditioned through. Hence, classical conditioning. There's the whole, again, concept, as Pavlov would show us, how there, if you do touch the hot oven, oh child, then you will get burned. And there's also not only hurt in that way, but also if mom tells you not to touch the hot oven, then, and you do touch the hot oven, then that, in fact, is disobedience. So punishment and obedience is a big part of the childhood. And this is quite obvious, self-exclamatory, but Kohlberg notes this in his empirical observations of how children and therefore human beings begin their formal or formalizing of morality. Because then there's obeying the rules to avoid punishment. Well, if mom says, don't touch the oven that's hot because there's chicken baking in there, because the child has, there's not much of a connection there. There's chicken in there. It's baking, and they can smell it. But boy, does that look interesting! And I wonder if, when I touch it, what would happen? Or I wonder if I would touch the hot light bulb, what would happen? Because now with LED light bulbs, maybe that's not such a problem anymore. I don't know. I haven't touched an LED light bulb lately when it's on. But those old light bulbs that would burn, and then touching that light bulb that's been on for hours could burn that finger. And Mom says, don't touch the light bulb. Don't touch the stove. You'll get burned. And I care for you as Mom. I care for you. So don't touch it. So then it becomes then an expectation as well as a command, a mandate. And children, of course, look to their parents as we would look to God. So in their minds, this is God saying, don't do it. And if you do, there is punishment. And of course, the child does go up and touch the stove. Ow! Now for some parents, they say, well, that's punishment enough. Other parents say, I told you not to. Go to your room. It's punishment. There's a consequence. Don't touch the stove. Don't cross the street. Look both ways. But if you don't, of course, and God forbid, don't get hit by a car. Kohlberg observed this. Kohlberg formalized and put into a system how morality then begins to develop. See, in step two, then, of course, we look at this. Naive hedonism. That is, conforms to get rewards, or conforms to get rewards, and to have favors returned. So in this step two, we're not even into adolescence yet, but in this formative stage, the child is saying, well, it's just all about me. And Mom, of course, there's that sense of, as we learned from Piaget and, of course, from other theorists, the need to feel secure. And Eric Erickson, of course, looks at this too. To feel secure, I'm at home. Mom is here. I'm good. I'm bonding with Mom and Dad. Of course, Dad, as the child learns, goes out to work. And, of course, in our day and age, Mom goes out to work too. So there's the nanny, or there is the babysitter, or there's grandma. I'm here with those who care about me, and therefore I feel secure. So I can then, but there's also, well, if I want a cookie, then I can get a cookie. If I want to watch television, I can watch television, or watch a video on the laptop. I can watch a video on the laptop with my juice box. Okay. The naivete is everything is okay. Well, it might not be, but the point is, I'm in a secure place, the child thinks. Naivete. Hedonism, quite a strong word, but Kohlberg uses this to underscore the fact that children need to know, or children are, rather, in that place where they need to know that it's okay to talk about themselves and also that they have expectations of getting the cookie, having lunch, eating all that they want, maybe, and it's all about me. And that, and also the fact, oh, it's more narcissistic, if you will, but more the thing of hedonism that I can have, I can, you know, have what I want to drink, I can have different things, I have privilege, because I'm at home. And eventually there's preschool. And at preschool, if I do what the teacher says, I get a reward. Oh, all these great things. This is wonderful. I get to play. Oh, this is great. Hence, a sense of hedonism, as opposed to the adult version of hedonism, where, of course, eat, drink, for tomorrow we die, to excess, for the child to excess, is within the limits of what the babysitter or the mother or the grandmother, the caretaker, is there to then put on that child. So child A doesn't get sick, and two, the child is safe because the adult knows that they are accountable to another adult saying, well, what did you do? What did you do with little Johnny? Now, little Sue, little Susie, she, you know what she need. Did she have her medicine at 10 o'clock today? As far as the child's concerned, I'm home, I'm having a good time, I'm watching TV, I'm having my cookie. Naivete and hedonism. But then conforming to get rewards and to have favors returned. If I do what my caretaker says, I get the cookie. If I do what my caretaker says, I can watch more television and watch my favorite shows. But if I don't do what the caretaker says, if I don't do what mom says, then things are taken away. And I don't want that. I like the pleasure of watching the TV show, whichever the popular TV show is for kids these days. It changes every day, it seems. You get the idea. Level one, level two. Now, or step two and step one. Step three, which is falls into level two, or the conventional level with Kohlberg, ranges from age 7 to age 11. Now we're into first grade, primary school, almost to that teenage year or the teenage level, but not quite, more into the middle school, pre-middle school stage. Here, step three, good boy, good girl morality. In other words, to conform to avoid disapproval or dislike by others. So am I accepted by my peers? Am I accepted by my teacher? Am I okay? If I conform to the rules that are, I'm okay and I'm accepted. That is a value now that has come into the child's psyche to where they are thinking, okay, if I do what I'm expected of doing and I'm not naughty, if I do conform, then I'll get the reward, I'll get the attaboy, attagirl, good boy, good girl. Oh, you're such a good boy. You're such a good girl. I feel so good about myself. I will then do more moral things and conform and do what the rules say. Hence, conversely, bad girl, bad boy. And there's the negative. What sometimes, of course, we observe there too, that can also perpetuate rebellion. And perpetuate a boy or a girl between age 7 and 11, if they mess up or whatever. Now we get into the area of, well, I don't feel secure. I don't feel my needs are met. Maybe there's neglect. But if I act out negatively, I might get the attention that I need genuinely and in a valid way. But they misbehave and they are immoral to gain that attention and perceived acceptance. However, here, to stick to Kohlberg's steps, step three has more to do with the fact that as the child conforms, then there is, of course, the reward, verbally and also mentally, emotionally, and psychologically. Step four says, and of course, this is the latter part, right into age 11 into age 12, almost, not quite. Step four, conforms to avoid censure by authorities. So if I do what I'm told, I can then be heard. So I can tell my story about what happened in the playground. And did you know? And I saw this. But if I misbehave, if I disobey, then the adult in my life, or adults, plural, in my life, they don't want to listen. They're more about, go to your room. I don't want to listen to that. Talk to the hand. You're such a bad boy, such a bad girl. I don't listen to you. No, go away. Which then translates into non-acceptance, rejection, and a sense of insecurity. So Kohlberg took a lot of time to give attention to this, but also in the context of the development of the moral code or morality in the psyche of human beings, regardless of gender. For morality transcends gender. However, it is, of course, acted out. It is played out different ways, whether it's a boy or a girl. So, step one, step two, and then step three and four, we are looking at the conformity ages. Good boy, good girl. Oh, And then I won't be shut down by the authorities if I conform to the rules. And then if I know I'm a good boy, good girl, then I know I can get far in my life and in my relationships. Maybe even to the point of manipulation, of course, the negative side, or to the whole thing of I now am beginning to get a sense of who I am. But then come the adolescent years of what I like to call the mental health years. Mentally ill years for some of us, because there's that whole thing of differentiation and becoming my own person starting age 13. And for some, even age 12, going on into 13, 14, and so on. Because developmentally, it makes sense. How can you become an adult if you do not differentiate from your parents? If you do not differentiate from your parents, becoming your own identity, your own person, then you will have a harder time becoming your own adult, your own person. Colbert saw this as well. He said, yeah, I see that there's a shift, a change. As an objective empiricist, an objective scientist, he says, okay, now I'm seeing that these 12, 13, 14-year-olds on up, they conform to maintain, as opposed to the child, conform to maintain communities with an emphasis on individual rights. Let's unpack this. First, conforming to maintain communities. Communities. As I conform to maintain communities, then I conform to what is helpful to be a part of the community and not to feel rejected. As we know, when it comes to teenagers, what's the big deal? They want to feel that they're in, that they're with the in crowd. What's the worry of the parent? And I'm a parent of a 16-year-old. I understand. The worry of the parent is, does my still child in my mind, of course, in the mind of the adolescent, I'm becoming an adult here. I'm becoming more independent. That's good. Hopefully they are. How is that happening? If they conform to the rules, if they begin to understand that they'll begin to fit in and get ahead and be able to build on who they really are, and that there are rewards if they conform and obey the rules. From Kohlberg's observations, of course, in the system. But more importantly, as we look at the conformity, then also is the emphasis on individual rights. I become my own person, says the adolescent. I need to then still, though, I have a right to be me. I'm not going to be what my mom expects of me now all the time, or what my dad expects of me all the time. And they do not, you know, it's something else that's going to begin to define me, the relationships with my friends, my pursuits as far as my goals in life. At least I have some sense of goals. Not all teenagers do. Of course, they're more into the moment anyway, as you know. Having fun with the friends, that's really the big deal as far as community. Although they're wondering about college, university, and what do I do beyond high school? At the same time, simultaneously, I'm in high school. Or middle school, high school, and I'm having fun with my friends. That's all I care about. And if I'm going to drive a car, for instance, well, then I need to get a job at the fast food place or at the grocery store, or so I can pay for the gasoline that's needed and also the repairs for the car. That's really where they're at the moment. But some teenagers are thinking ahead, and they begin to realize that, ooh, if I arrived at my job on time, I value the work that I'm doing there, I take it seriously, as opposed to not seriously, and of course, it's up and down with this. We know this. Biologically, the frontal lobe is starting to grow even more, and teenagers become moody, and it's an up and down thing, hit and miss. Sometimes they don't show up to the work, and they get fired, and they need to then look for a different job, and they're wondering, who am I? What does it all mean? These questions. course, those are questions that carry on to adulthood if they don't have a healthy sense of grounding and also point of reference and foundation when it comes to family of origin. So with Kohlberg, he's saying, what we notice and know about teenagers is that when they conform to the rules, there is then a sense of community, a connection to community. However, there are teenagers that do conform to the rules, and they end up in still isolating from community, probably because of temperament and who they are. And this whole thing of isolation, maybe, and you just don't understand. Hence, differentiation. They're still trying to figure out, who am I? But the overall arc is, if I conform, I belong. And Kohlberg saw this. And also individual rights begin to get stronger, leading up to age 18, 19, 20, into the 20s, on into adulthood. The person then says, I have individual principles of conscience. And individual principles of conscience have to do with the fact that the adult now is saying, I now understand that I conform and I obey the rules. This is good, but now I understand who I am, and also I have other principles now because of my positive and negative experiences when it comes to justice. For example, when it comes to a male who wants to protect a female, and he'll do anything to bring justice to the situation, sometimes he'll break the rules to bring justice, to protect the woman. Hence the example. Or with the example of the female, as you read about in your textbook, the females want to care, females tend to want to care and help others, it states. And based upon that, then there's this thing about principles, where if I can help and care for that child or for these people, that principle, that value is higher than always trying to keep the rule. Hence, we have this phenomena of policy over people, or people over policy. Some, in their adulthood at this stage, will say, well, I care more about the people than the policy. For instance, the policy may say that there's that we then have a trash can at every single door, everywhere, and it's in a certain spot, and they're 24/7 in the building. However, there are people who are not aware of this, and they're always looking for it and so on. But so I'm going to move the trash cans to other places, and to then break the policy. I'll add more trash cans in the building because people are always looking for them for some reason. Hence, there's a need to change this, but you have others say, no, the policy has got the trash cans in these certain places in the building, period. Do not add or subtract. Whereas, you may have a female who is working at the organization and says, no, I care about people too much and their health and safety and wellness. I'm going to provide more trash cans and make sure there are trash cans in all the rooms. Not just some, but all. You get the idea. Policy, people. People over policy. And vice versa. Kohlberg began to see that when it comes to adults, there are principles that they will then have. And a lot of it comes from family of origin. Again, going back to the step one through step five, because with some families of origin, there's abuse, neglect. There's also inconsistency when it comes to rule making and rule keeping, or there's really no sense of belonging. There's a disconnect. A lot of different issues, complicated. However, what we do understand is that every person takes what they have from family of origin and carries on into their adulthood, and then translates into what principles they have then developed for themselves, as the male and as the female, as a community. And by God's grace, we see more and more of God's common grace upon community in general. And I hope that's the case for your community. Of course, there's a lot of people who have a lot of strange ideas and strange principles. But by God's grace, there are principles that do make sense. And hopefully, where there are truly, again, given the biblical context and biblical worldview, more principles being carried out that are compliant with the Bible. We keep praying. We keep going. Kohlberg, of course, gives us a framework for the process or the and also the stages of how morality then is developed in human beings overall. In the next video, we're going to talk about Kohlberg in more detail, because what Kohlberg does, excuse me, not Kohlberg, but Fowler. Take Kohlberg into Fowler. Kohlberg talks about morality and in general, how it all builds. Fowler takes what Kohlberg has done, and he says, this is how now we can apply his theory to understand how faith is developed in a Christian person. And we'll have a good time in understanding how that then develops based upon Fowler's ideas. And hopefully help you to better understand how to help others in your ministry as we apply the gift of psychology.